You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It is episode 205 on this Thursday, the 22nd of March. Now, you two lads have done quite a lot of research into the show tonight. I've taken a bit of a week off from the research. So I thought I'd put at least a really good intro onto the show. Now, from the feedback I've gotten from you guys only, that my inspirational quotes from last week, you weren't massive fans of.
Well, that's very, very clear, or as my little inspirational book says,
yep,
you can't swear on radio.
So I figure I would do the exact opposite today, and I would do something, you know, a bit more edgy. And what do you call your boobs? Now, Garth.
Yes.
What I've been told from this very statistical, logical name generator that I found on a page on Facebook, you would call your boobs juicy udders.
That sounds about right.
Mine are big... Big peaks.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark's.
Yes.
Yours are modest skittles.
Really?
Modest skittles.
I don't think that's right.
So I'm modest skittles over here. So anyway, so that's my...
That's your introduction?
That's my introduction that I've spent an entire week researching while you guys have done actual work. So anyway...
Yeah, wow. So is that what are our boobs called according to BuzzFeed?
I don't know. It's some random Facebook nonsense. It was basically me going, I haven't prepared an intro.
What have we got on this week? Leon.
What have we got on this week? Well, we're going to do some what we've been playing because that's generally what we do.
Yes.
And then we're also going to talk about a very special time in board gaming that was about 10 years or so ago.
Going to do some form of retrospective.
Oh. Yes. And if we have time, we've got a few other bibs and bobs up our sleeve, even though I like to roll my sleeves up because I've got some sexy arm tattoos.
You do.
Anyway, so let's throw to a song. Or Mark, do you want to say hello first?
Hello.
Yeah, well, anyway, enough of you with your modest skittles. So let's do the thing, I suppose.
Well, before we do that.
Oh, fine.
Thanks, Area 52,
for supporting us
and all six of our modest skittles.
Well, I forgot about them because I was going in there to buy a new Dungeons & Dragons book before the show, but I may have had a flat tire, so I didn't do it.
Yeah.
So I kind of forgot it.
All right, we'll throw to a song. We'll come back. We'll really start the show.
Yeah.
Because Mark has something that's absolutely legendary that he wants to talk about. Is that right?
Shiny.
All right. We'll be back after this song. You're with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Songs? What do
I don't know why I'm singing the I Dream of Jeannie theme. I'm way too young for that kind of shenanigans.
Well, that was the very melodic Marlon Williams with What's Chasing You? You're with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And Mark.
Garth.
Let's get into this legendary thing that you want to talk with everyone about.
Absolutely. But before I do, I just want to say, take my love.
No.
Take my land.
No way.
No.
Take me where I cannot stand. I don't care. I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me, Leon.
I can't believe you're wearing your brown hoodie.
I wasn't planning on taking the sky.
No, not a brown hoodie, a brown shirt?
No.
No?
My brown coat. I left my brown coat. But you can take me out to the Black Garth and tell him I'm not coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me.
So we're pretty niche as it is, but I think you've lost even more, a few people now.
That's, of course, the Serenity song from the TV show that every nerd worth their nerd coat knows all about from Firefly.
I've never seen all of it.
The most amazing TV show that got cancelled at the end of one season in... the history of nerd culture.
Hang on. Did you just hear that Leon hasn't watched all of Firefly?
Nope. I've watched the first two episodes about half a dozen times. I've probably seen them all with bibs and bobs, so I've never watched the thing all the way
through. That's almost like a Dice Man not playing Ticket to Ride or something.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it, Garth?
Offensive.
Yes.
Anyway, let's get on with this. So what I have been playing this week, and last week in fact, is the most elegantly named board game ever, Legendary Encounters, A Firefly deck building game.
There you go.
Colon.
I assume.
No, no colon at the end.
Oh, that's a shame.
Not even a semi?
Produced by Upper Deck Entertainment in 2016. Game designed by Ben Chichosky and Daniel Mandel. Now, of course, people may have heard us talk about Legendary before. There's Legendary Marvel, which Leon is a huge fan of and has almost every expansion known to man.
I was about to say, no, I think you'll find I've got every single one, but no, that's not true.
Did you ever buy the Spider-Man Homecoming one?
Nope.
I was going to make a Spider-Man noise, but I can't do the...
And I absolutely refuse. However, I did, about 2 days ago, receive in the mail the new expansion, the Champions expansion, which has all the young superhero stuff, the new Miss Marvel and Gwenpool and stuff.
Yeah.
Looking forward to getting to the table with my sexy custom mat.
Awesome. So that was obviously the first version of Legendary, the Marvel Legendary.
The OG.
And as we said, there's been... Would we have to be at least 20 expansions, I'd say, for that?
No, I don't know about 20, but there's a fair few. There's over 10. Lot. There's over 10, put it that way.
Well, I reckon there's well more than 10. Anyway, of course, then we had...
Leon's getting his mobile phone out to check these expansion numbers.
We did have, and we have spoken about it on this show, Legendary Encounters, an alien deck-building game, which allows you to play any of the Alien franchise movies, not the new ones, the original ones,
and for
one to four.
For a lot of people in the reviewer space, it was one of their deck builders or even possibly one of their games for, what, 2014, 2015?
Yes, yes. And we played that. Trent owns that one.
Correct.
That's had a lot of fun. It's very hard.
Yeah,
yes, but we have died a lot.
But the encounter system that they came up with that game was really, really good. And we thought, well, this is the future for Legendary. Every game they release from now on is going to have this system because it would be stupid to release a game that didn't have this system, wouldn't it?
Well, then, of course, they released the Legendary Encounters, a Predator deck-building game.
Which was Encounters. Good for them.
Yes, and then
which means you could not only fight aliens, you could have Predators fighting aliens
as well. Yeah, you could combine them together, absolutely.
And you could probably film them on your iPhone, and it'd probably be better than the two films they brought out.
And then they brought out three new versions. So, of course, one of them was Legendary Encounters, a Firefly deck-building game.
Yes.
The second one was Buffy Legendary, brackets, not an Encounters game.
No, because there's no... You couldn't do Encounters with that. They don't have enough, you know, canon to go on for that at all.
And well, then Buffy was only, what, 10 seasons?
Yeah, it's only got, you know, just a couple of hundred episodes or whatever.
Well, and then the third one was Big Trouble in Little China Legendary, also brackets, not an Encounters version.
I mean, there probably isn't enough of that to make Encounters out of, but...
you could have an Encounter.
Well, I did a little bit of research today, you'd be surprised to know, about why have some of them gone down the Encounters path and some of them not. And because, I'll just explain, the Firefly one works almost exactly like the Alien one, where you have three sort of sets of objectives that you work through in the mission. And in the case of the Firefly one, they are three episodes. They have, and all the episodes are branded A, B, or C. So you form a game with an A, a B, and a C. Now, it could be Pilot Part 1, Pilot Part 2, and the second episode, which I can't remember what it's called, the train job, I think. You can play them in order, or you can just mix up an A and a B and a C.
Okay.
So you have the two pilots, you have all the episodes, and then you have one other one, which is actually the film.
So it's basically exactly the same as Alien.
That's the Encounter system. Now, apparently,
isn't it?
The reason why they didn't do that, well, particularly with Buffy, is in Alien, you obviously just have the crew, a relatively small number of people. In Firefly, you have the nine main characters. And one of the differences between Firefly and Aliens is you will either have five characters you are effectively playing, and I'll talk about that in a second, and then you build the deck, the it's the bridge deck, the character deck.
It's like the barracks where you get new characters from.
Exactly. You build that out of the four characters that you don't have in the game. So every game has aspects of all nine characters. And they do give you hints in the manual about, well, for these episodes, because Wash and Zoe and Kaylee played a big part in these episodes, you'll want to have them as your avatar, which means you'll build the deck out of the other characters, because lots of cards might refer to, in the episode deck, lots of cards might refer to This happens to Wash. This happens to Zoe. If you don't have Wash, this costs more. Things like that. So they give you a bit of a guide. You don't have to follow that. But in Buffy, because they've got a whole slew of characters, some of them that could be classed as good and evil at the same time, you could have a Spike as a bad guy. You could have a Spike as a good guy. And so what they wanted to have was that flexibility where you can choose your 2, 3, 4, 5. You could have a Spike as a bad guy. You could have a Spike as a good guy. And so what they wanted to have was that flexibility where you can choose your 5 characters you generally use to build the deck there. You can choose your 5 from any of the characters in there. Now, apparently in Buffy, they have this light and dark track, which provides a bit of a twist because, you know, we all know those characters, sometimes they were better than others.
Mm-hmm.
But because they had a big range of characters they can use over a huge amount of episodes, it was too many episodes to make it episodic, so they wanted to just give you access to all the characters.
Sounds like a cop-out to me.
Yeah, it does, because they could have very easily had every season could have just been one episode, and then you'd end up with like 8.
It could, yeah.
And it would have been Spike, Dark Spike,
and it all would have been perfectly reasonable. I mean, it's still, the Buffy is one of those things that it fits perfectly with Legendary, as you said, because there's so many characters to it. So it's kind of, it makes sense either which way. But as we kind of said, after Encounters, it just seems so weird that any of them wouldn't be in Encounters.
Well, it also means really you can have Mal and Zoe and Wash and Kaylee taking on the aliens. You can have Ripley taking on Patience and Niska and all those sort of Firefly villains, but it doesn't work so well if you have Captain America fighting aliens.
Well, it can be done. It's just there's a bit of homebrewing and screwing around. But it can be done. I think they've actually Upper Deck have released things saying this is how you do it. But I don't imagine you do it once for a laugh and then you'd probably never do it again.
So anyway, fanboying here with the old Firefly.
Yes.
Can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. So, as I said, you basically put together 3 episodes and they will be a game. And you have 3 separate objectives. Now, another nice little tweak that I found in this game is you have these inevitable cards. And what they are is basically they're big bad ships, and they form the last card of each objective A, B, and C. And basically what they do is they chase all the other cards through and into the combat zone. So if you haven't finished, by the time these cards come up, they're big bads that you basically can't defeat. They will kill you if you don't hurry up.
Are they the Reavers?
So one of them is a Reaver, one of them is a big Alliance gunship, one of the other ones is another big Alliance ship, basically.
Yep.
They're just there to sort of form a bookend to the end of that particular episode and move you on to the next one.
So it's a timing mechanism,
essentially. Yeah, and it works really well because the objectives, obviously, it depends where. So let's say in the one that comes to mind is the train episode, where you've got Patience, who's the sort of cowboy bad guy, and you've got her sort of offsider. So you have to defeat both of those. That's your objective in that episode. Now, obviously, in your episode deck, which is probably about 20 cards, they could be right at the front or they could be right at the end. You also have mixed in there, which is a new thing in this episode. You have side jobs. So you might have a side job where you have to collect the wobble-headed geisha dolls, or you might have a side job where Wash has to juggle some geese, and they're sort of interesting ways to earn credits. Now, what are credits, you ask?
Probably money, I reckon.
Well, between the 3 episodes, you have an intermission phase where any credits you've earned, you can spend on repairing damage to Serenity. Because did I mention you get damage to characters and you get damage to Serenity? You have 2 lots of damage.
Well, no, you didn't. But you also didn't mention, for anyone who doesn't know what Legendary or Encounters is, that this is a deck-building game.
Yeah.
Garth, I will mention I said Legendary Encounters, a Firefly deck-building game.
Where the whole point is to buy new cards.
Yes.
Each player is cooperatively working together in this game against the mechanics of the game to defeat 1, 2, or 3 sort of
lots
events
of
that will happen out through the course of the game.
So deck builder, so where you start off with a very vanilla hand. In this case, you've basically got 2 cards. You've got Shiny, which gives you 1 influence point, and influence points you spend to recruit new characters and new cards into your deck.
So it's money. It's currency.
Yeah. And then you have Misbehaven, which is what gives you 1 point of attack, and that's what you use to defeat the bad guys. So, yeah, you start off with a very basic deck. You have your character deck out there, which, as I said, is made up of the four characters that you aren't playing. However, if you're playing with five characters, each of them will have an avatar of a particular character, and that will tell them a special ability and how much health they have.
Sure.
If you're playing with two people, what you have is two avatars where you're playing them, and then the other three of the five are sort of like non-player characters, where if those characters get mentioned in a bad light, that thing still happens.
Sure.
But if those characters get mentioned in a good light, like, oh, if you've got Book, you don't take any damage on this, well, Book doesn't count as a main character. That's it. So it's sort of, you can access their special abilities, but apart from that, they don't do anything.
Sure.
But it's just the way they have all nine characters present in every episode.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. So does it mean, because you're the only one out of the three of us who have played this, do you think it would be a more complete game if you get it to the higher player count so that there is all of those players acting as a player around the table?
Look, I've played it only with two.
Yep.
And the very first game we played, we got absolutely smashed. Sarah, my partner, hasn't played a lot of deck builders, and she hadn't played any legendary before. I've played a lot of legendary, but this is where this is a little bit different. So similar to Aliens, different to the Marvel legendary, and I just want to come back to, there's a few little wrinkles in this one. So one wrinkle that this one has that the alien doesn't have is you have a talent card. You have one of those at the start. When you you complete things, so often mission sub-objectives, you might get an extra talent card. Other cards might give you extra talent cards, and they're a special card that goes into your deck. They're all very bland, and I'm going to talk about the art in this game.
Okay.
But when you draw a talent card, you basically, it lets you draw another card, but then your special ability on your avatar basically says, it says defeat a talent. If you throw away that talent card for good, you can do the super duper special ability, and each character is different. You can get more than one talent card, and so you can choose, okay, I'm going to just use this to draw a card until I really, really need it. There are also flaw cards. If you get a flaw card, each
FLAW?
Yeah, FLAW, okay. So bad things. Each avatar also has a flaw. So it's like a bad thing that each character has, and they're quite specific and very suited to the characters, not that I can remember what any of them are. But these flaw cards, as soon as you draw them, it's a bad thing, basically. So the talent and the flaw is something that hasn't been in... it's not in Alien and it's not in Predator.
In Predator, no, that's right, yeah.
And so they provide a little bit of a wrinkle, but in Alien and Predator you have the coordinate ability, which allows you to basically play a card on someone else's turn. That player then is able to copy the ability of that card that they don't have.
Which for those games is massive.
Yep.
Because, first of all, it allows you to actually be caring about what this other player is doing, but more importantly, it allows you to help the whole overall mission, which, and I've only played the alien version, but when you're trying to destroy or kill aliens, they can be mean mofos, and you all need to be able to combine your strength to be able to kill them.
And with obviously, because your hand is so basic at the start, it takes a while before you get some even sort of semi-decent cards. So the more you can get input from other players, the more you can sort of ramp up.
So is this the same as the other legendary games in that you will play your hand of cards and then a bad guy come out of their deck and then the next player plays their hand and the bad guy comes out of their deck?
How it works is the first thing you do on the turn is you bring out an episode card into the verse,
okay,
which is the bit across the top.
Yep.
If there's another card there, they push each other along.
Yep. So just like the villains.
Once they get to fill up the five spots, one will jump down into what they call the combat zone.
Yep.
There's also the operations, which is the same as aliens. And then the bridge is where the characters are.
So it is on every person's turn, one of them comes out.
Yes.
And you play. So if that makes it like all the other legendary games, that basically means that the box probably says, what, 4 to 5 players?
It says 1 to 5.
1 to 5.
Yeah.
If it's anything like the normal legendary, 4 to 5 players is pretty much out.
Yeah,
completely. Because so I recommend it, because it's one of those things. It is one of my favourite games ever, and I would recommend it to anyone to play it and a lot of people to buy it. However, if somebody said to me, I'm buying it, I will probably always play it. I've got a large family or a large game, will always probably play this with 4 or 5, I'd say, don't even look at it.
And that's where I think where, Garth, we've played the Alien one a couple of times. I think we've always played with probably 4 or 5.
At least, yeah. It just can't be. I agree. Ridiculous.
Everything I read about this was it's quite hard.
Yep.
If you play with the higher player counts, but with two,
yep.
This is what we found. So coordinate, it's important in Alien. It's even more important in this. And sure. There were actually a lot of cards. So you have in Alien you have the sergeants.
Yep.
In this, you have the brown coats,
yep.
And they're basically a generic coordinate card to give you 2 recruitment points, 2 influence, and you can share that on someone else's turn. A lot more of the cards in the character deck have the coordinate ability,
right.
And because this is obviously a team of people all working together, just like the TV show, like it is in Alien, whereas in the Marvel Legendary and in the other legendaries, it's semi-cooperative in that you're all working to defeat the demons, the bad guys. But at the end of the game, you add up your victory points from what monsters, what bad guys you destroyed, and that determines
but
who
you
wins.
Don't have to do that. It's just that little extra thing. Correct. At the end. It's still completely a co-op game.
So let's get to the crux of this.
Yeah.
Is it fun?
Look, as I said, the first game was really hard.
Yep.
Because we didn't quite get how important that coordinate was.
Sure.
And buying those brown coats really early on is really important. There's only 5 of them in this game. Coordinate is super important. And by what we found in the second and third game, because we mastered the coordinate and because we also realized, because you've got the same little symbols that you have in all the games, like Marvel, where you have the Green Hulk fist,
yep.
And the computer chip, those 5 symbols.
On each of the cards, which means even, that the cards will combo together.
Yeah,
well.
It's even more important than this because certain characters will only have certain symbols. The combos make a huge difference. So between doing lots of coordinating and lots of combos, we actually found it relatively easy to defeat the game. And I guess it took us playing the first time poorly to recognise that.
All right. So my second question is a 2-parter.
Yeah.
Is... have both of you watched Firefly?
Oh, we're both huge fans.
So, did you both enjoy it? Were the cards thematic? Did they really, suck you into the Firefly universe? Did you feel like you were in those episodes? Because the whole reason I would personally play this is for that very experience.
Yes.
Because Alien Encounters has grown on me. I didn't really like it too much the first time. Played it again and again. Really liked it. And with the Queen Alien expansion that came out, it's like, whoa, this is bloody tough.
And we didn't even mix any Predator stuff with it as well.
No.
Which could also make it cool.
But why would I bother getting Firefly unless I'm a super fan?
So a 2-part answer, I guess. 1 part is I love how... So not only can you get strikes on the... So damage on the characters, you can get strikes on the ship.
Sure.
Which you then have to repair. But as a counterpoint to that, in that intermission phase between episodes, you can buy ship upgrades. And I'm just showing the 2 guys here the playmat. So the playmat has Serenity with 4 spots to take damage and also to upgrades.
Yeah, nice.
So those credits I mentioned, you can spend them to get your health back, but you can spend them on upgrades for Serenity. And they might do things like, it costs you 1 less to scan or flip over the cards in the top because they come out face down, or... We had one where it was quite expensive, but it gave us 1 extra card every turn.
Any of them give you a new companion quarters?
No.
Shame.
What was so the there's bit? That. The second thing was, as you said, going through the story. Like one of the ones we had last night was the Shindig, where Mal had to fight the Jewel, and Kaylee was at the big party, and the card was called Pretties, and it's Kaylee in a dress. Now, the memories of the show are really vibrant.
Mm.
The pictures, on the other hand...
Yep. Hang on. Before you jump into that art, I've got a couple of quick questions which will end with that
art.
Yes. So first off, would you recommend it over the Alien game?
For me, yes. I mean, I love the Alien theme.
Yep.
But for me, this is... It's more self-encapsulated. It soaks up the theme more. You've got the ship. You've got the people.
But if you liked Alien a lot more than Firefly, you'd still probably recommend it. Or is it just this is a better game?
It's all subjective, man. No, you've asked him a question. He's answered the question.
I think they're
equally... What's the deal with airline peanuts?
I think they're equally good.
Can't have them anymore.
But, yeah, if you love the Alien franchise, you'd go with that one. If you love Firefly, you'd go with this one.
Would you recommend it over the Firefly game?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? I really like that game.
Oh, look, I like that game as well, but it just goes on and on and on, and it's a super luck.
And finally, the third thing, of course, is it the worst art in board gaming history?
Yes.
Yep.
All right.
It's abysmal. There's like one or two cards that are quite nice. There's probably a few more that are okay.
And the playmat looks all right.
Yeah, look, the playmat is really nice because it doesn't have any pictures from the actual game.
No. And on that bombshell...
The character art... A few more that are okay.
And the playmat looks all right.
Yeah, look, the playmat is really nice because it doesn't have any pictures from the actual game.
No.
And on that bombshell...
The character art is abysmal. And, like, here we are. There's a TV show. They can use screen caps. There are comics of Firefly and Serenity. There's plenty of art there. Why do they have to get a kindergarten class together to draw these characters? So I'll tell you what, most of them, that's what it looks like. Once you start playing and you get into the theme, you overlook that.
Yeah.
But at first glance, I almost threw this in the rubbish.
There we go.
And,
all right.
And the one other thing is...
Seriously? You've used up half the show.
So you've got 500 cards... But 500 cards in a box take up about, you know...
Yeah, they're not much.
5-6 inches.
Yep.
You've got the playmat, which goes in the middle of the box. That is the only reason you have a box. Otherwise, it could be in a...
Tube.
Yeah.
It's like, probably because you can fit that and Alien and Predator all in the one box.
Well, you
and also, if you're going to charge $100, you can't have it
there's
small.
There's no expansion. That's the other thing I'd say. I picked this up on special for about $60, $65. It was a great buy. There's no way I'd buy it at $100 or
whatever
it is.
We're going to shut up about this now because you've used up too much of your time, Mark.
But, Garth, you can't take the sky from me.
No, but I can take the air from you.
I get it.
So, on that note, we are the Dice Men Cometh. Clearly, Mark likes Firefly the game. We will be back after this song so that we can talk more board games, more card games, more something else. All thank you to Area 52. We're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
You literally broke the egg timer.
Okay, there you go. That was the Bronx with Sore Throat. And that song certainly ended like how sore throats feel, I reckon. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Yes.
Leon.
Hello.
Where were you in 2008?
Where was I in 2008? I was probably at, actually, this is completely true, I would probably be at our friendly local board gaming store, Area 52.
Really?
Starting my...
Sounds like some form of paid...
Starting my... Yeah, it is. Starting my comic book collection, which they have then taken thousands of dollars out of my pockets. And the board gaming collection as well. In 2008, yeah, I would have been, what, 20... 21, so I would have been running EB Games or yep. running a Video Easy.
You wouldn't have been doing much running at all.
And no, not back in then. Oh, no. Yeah, no, not at all. But, yeah, running those are jobs that I quite enjoyed at the time.
Actually, there you go, Mark. That's quite funny because I reckon I would have been at Area 52 buying board games because I was involved with a group, ostensibly the sort of the beginnings of the Hobart Game Society.
It all started with two shelves on the back of the air.
Yeah,
back
that's right. Getting into
news
those,
agency bit.
Those new Euro games that everyone was talking about.
Sure. Yes. Well, for me, 2008 was quite a big year because that was the year I moved to Tasmania. Now, I remember finishing up on 30 June at my old travel agency where I used to work, jumping in the car and heading south. And I then started... in Tasmania about 3 or 4 days later. So I moved from one big island to one tiny little backwards island, which also basically led me down this board gaming path because that's when I got to spend more time with Trent.
Yeah, plenty of
me
time.
Me too.
And we had to figure out how do we spend time together without actually having to talk to each other.
Yeah. Drinking a
I
lot.
Know. Drinking a lot and then playing board games. And he, look, to his credit, he had to suffer through me enjoying for a week or two Flux.
Yeah.
For me, enjoying the first game of Munchkin. Him teaching me Illuminati.
Yeah.
So, look, 2008, in terms of my board gaming history, is probably a bit of a seminal year.
Yeah.
Also happens to be 10 years ago from right now.
Yes.
And we got talking about what are these years in board gaming 2008 for me is one of them. You go onto Board Game Geek and type in games created, published in 2008.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And you go, that's a pretty vintage year. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Now, I'm going to kickstart this 2008 party.
There was no Kickstarter in 2008, Garth.
No, it was April 2009. I do know that. I'm going to start with not the highest rated game in 2008, according to Board Game Geek, but the number two game.
Yes.
Battlestar Galactica. Ah,
the original.
The original game where everyone is a Cylon except me because I'm trustworthy and you can all believe everything I say because I have the interests of this ship and this fleet and, dare I say it, humanity at stake. I'm all on board, guys.
Sounds like a Cylon to me.
You can trust me.
Brilliant.
I might be the president or the admiral or the pres-admiral, but 2008 bringing out Battlestar Galactica was, for me, the first game that really was that co-op with the betrayer mechanic that I loved.
Yep.
Yes, add a couple of expansions in and it gets fiddly. Yes, it is a game that takes probably too long than it probably should, but it's still a game I will happily play every single year.
Yep.
And I generally do at BorderCon with the same half a dozen people where we have such a ball. It is so much fun, and it's a game that's now 10 years old.
Yeah, and obviously, if it wasn't for that game, we wouldn't have Dead of Winter.
Correct.
Yeah, and see, I had sort of stumbled into this hobby. One of the first games I played was the Shadows over Camelot by Days of Wonder, which was the first cooperative with a traitor, a hidden traitor. But then to stumble across Battlestar Galactica that just took it to the whole next level, having been totally in love with the TV show, this for me was just a beautiful marriage of theme and mechanics. And today, I think, is unsurpassed in the hidden traitor game.
Oh, you're putting it higher than Dead of Winter.
Well, they're different. Whoa. They're different.
But it's kind of funny. It shows that competition can be a good thing because although this came after, as you said, Shadows Over Camelot was not really that massive until this came out. People played this and loved it and went, what other games like this? And went, well, there's this one other one. We'll play that. Because it was kind of, it was out for a few years and did all right. But then now it's still known today because basically, people just love this genre so much.
Yeah, now let me jump again, Garth, one more up the ladder.
You do
the
that.
Number three game on this list. We talked about Firefly. We talked about Deck Builders. Before 2008, Deck Builders as a genre did not exist. I mean, if you were playing a Deck Builder, you were playing a CCG, Magic, or the very original Netrunner, those sort of games. That was where you built a deck and then you played a game. In 2008, out came a little game by a guy called Donald X. Vaccarino. Still don't know what the X stands for. Called Dominion. That basically took that first part of building a deck before you played the game and turned that into a game. The very first Basic Dominion came out in 2008.
Leon, I can't believe we still let Mark talk about Deck Builders with the number of grammatical faux pas that he has made over the episodes with that.
It's quite impressive.
We've just done a Firefly game, and now we're doing Dominion. We are brave.
And I don't know where Thunderstone is, the original Thunderstone, because I didn't play a lot of...
Probably didn't come out that year.
2009. So I didn't play a lot of the original Dominion when it came out, but then I became a massive deck builder fan when I got into Thunderstone.
The thing is, though, there are probably 10 to 20 games which are truly groundbreaking in our hobby.
Yeah.
That they introduce whole new mechanics, whole new systems, and Dominion is definitely at the top of that pile.
Oh, yes.
The last 10 years, there have been countless deck builders, countless iterations, and obviously numerous expansions to Dominion. What I find amazing is that
they all came out this year as well.
Yeah.
There is at least two or three others here that are maybe not as important because they didn't create a genre, but as big as Dominion.
But Dominion is still for a lot of people, the deck builder that they play in. Yep. You look at all these Facebook forums, it's what's the best Dominion expansion? What's the one that I should get? Should it be Intrigue or should it be this or that and blah, 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 blah. Yep. So it is still in its conscious in the gaming consciousness, which I love.
So before we talk a bit more about this top 10, which, as we keep saying, is insane. Some of the ones we noticed just outside of the top 10, Say Anything was there, a party game that I'm a very big fan of. Mm-hmm. What else did we notice that was in the outside the top 10?
Oh, Android.
Android, the original Android
and
game.
And that is the game that I love. Yes, it's clunky. Yes, there's a 65-page rule book.
Yep.
Yes, you can end the game in negative victory points and you yep. shouldn't have even played it, but oh my God, it's intense.
Witch's Brew, which then turned into Broom Service yep. and won the Spiel. A Game of Thrones, the living card game, the very first edition.
Yep. The Call of Cthulhu card game as well, which was run for a very long time. I just
Lost
noticed
Cities.
The first Ultimate Edition of Werewolf, which before 2008 was a game that was kind of people knew of but didn't really know much. And then this was the first time that you could get a really good version of it with the Ultimate Edition, and now it's still here today.
Red November. We talked about that a few weeks back. That had its very first edition in the time box.
The gnomes in the submarines,
of course. In 2008.
Clack Lumberjack.
Tok
Tok Hoodman.
Yeah.
Which is still, for my kids, so much fun, and it's so tactile. It's that lovely next step up from Jenga. You get a beautiful tree. All you're trying to do is chop off the bark, keep the tree. There's some very good honourable mentions in this 2008 category.
Now, can I please read out the top 10? What the top 10 is?
You guys go for it.
All right. So
as long as you then talk about one,
I can definitely do that because I know which one it's going to be. But as we said before, we looked at this top 10. That if somebody said to us, "What is 10 games we could buy to have just an amazing board game collection?" We could arguably tell them the top 10 games from this year. And they would have nearly everything covered from every genre possible.
Have all their genres covered.
So,
okay, go.
Number 10, we've got Time's Up Total Recall, which is now Monikers is kind of a new version of that, which everyone loves. You've got Dixit, which is Dixit's still great. You've got Ghost Stories, which I will talk about in a second. You've got Space Alert. Cosmic Encounter, the newest version of that.
I'm going to talk about that one.
Which
for
is
sure. That's me, baby.
Obviously a monster. Stone Age, which again is just insane.
Well, it's the intro worker placement game for so many board gamers.
Yeah, and then Pandemic.
A little co-op game.
Yeah, Pandemic. And then Dominion, Battlestar Galactica, and the highest rated game for that year is Le Havre.
Yes.
So within that top 10, you have literally got nearly every single kind of board game in our entire hobby, and half of these are the innovators of that genre.
Correct. It's phenomenal.
So Ghost Stories, it came out the same year as Pandemic. I would argue it's better. Just because the theme's so much cooler. And it's a game that I love where you each take the role of a ninja trying to defend the city from horrible, horrible ghosts. Mark, you recently played this after I lent it to you. You wanted to play it for a very long time.
Yeah, well, it came out in 2008. Here I am 10 years later finally getting to play it.
And when I first got into the hobby of, like, probably, what, 5-6 years ago, it was one of the first games, after doing lots of YouTubing many a night, that I wanted to get my hands on.
Yeah.
It was one of the first, probably first five in my collection, I think, and it's still there now and it ain't going away.
Well, I mean, look, Pandemic. I mean, yes, we've had Pandemic Legacy.
Yep.
We've now got the Iberian Pandemic.
Pandemic The Cure, the DICE version.
We've got the new, what's the Rising Tide version of in the Netherlands where you're trying to stop water coming in. There's so many versions. I have still been playing, I think, if it wasn't the very first game that I played with my partner, it was one of, and she was blown away by it. Still so good to this day. Even the vanilla Pandemic without the expansions, although I have some of the expansions. Le Havre, obviously, it's a Uwe Rosenberg, overshadowed, I guess, by Agricola, which came before it, and then Caverna, which came after it. I've only played it once. I must admit, I really enjoyed it. And it is that Euro of turning stuff into more advanced stuff and then selling it to get victory points, but really clever.
I've said for years that Euros really aren't my thing, but I've always wanted to play Le Havre, so I think I might actually get onto the BorderCon Facebook page, find out who's got it that's coming, so I can tee up a game of it and get it played.
All right.
And we talked about recently London Dread and that co-op thing of the timed phase where you've got to make all your decisions, and then you see how it all turns out. Well, the original, and I'd still say the best,
Space Alert. What an amazing theme. What a hilarious board game by Vlada Hvartl. Where you make all these decisions and then you sit back and watch how badly
watch
it all
just turn to crap.
It's hilarious
but
and
it is,
wonderful.
It's brilliant. Now, come on, enough about this. Let's talk about Cosmic Encounter because I think it's pretty fair to say that everything else pales in comparison.
I mean, it's number 6 on the list.
I know.
Cosmic in Bloody Counter
it's
is number 6.
Outside the top 100 games of all time, which
yeah, way
it
too
breaks
high.
My
way
heart.
Way too high for me.
Oh, my God, it is too. What is wrong with you people?
Cosmic Encounter is without doubt the number one way to spend an hour and a half of your life.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Nah, sorry. Number 289, Time's Up Total Recall.
Nah.
I'll take that over Cosmic Encounter.
Cosmic Encounter, it is the best. And again, Richard, I know you're listening, maybe in the bath, maybe not, but you better bring your fully kitted out Cosmic Encounter to BorderCon because I will be playing it.
Yeah.
Hopefully 7 or 8 players
yeah.
with you and we will go spare on this. Yep. It is so much fun. You will get so many situations where none of the players know what the hell's going to go on. It will be hilarious and fun, and I'll probably lose, but that's okay.
Look, another one, I was going to say turn board games on their ear. Yes and no. Dixit, that what is this? What are these crazy cards with this crazy
what
art?
Have I smoked and why am I looking at this?
That's right. I'd say it's the first game that probably made people go, well, this is an art form. Because it is art. It just happens to be art and hundreds of cards.
And
of it.
Just, again, something, you know, sitting around telling little stories based on one word or one sentence.
And expansions are still coming out for most of
these
games
right.
as well.
That's right. I mean, look, this year is amazing. I didn't quite believe it until I saw it, that, as I said, even sticking to these top 10 games, they are all...
They've defined our genre. This top 10 games is pretty much where most of our genre to this day has come from.
Well, I started thinking about movies and think about how many movies from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago would I watch? And look, you go, okay, I can probably watch a couple of movies from that long ago because they're still relevant, they still look amazing, blah, 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 blah. But I'm just not sure...
Ooh, Dark Knight.
That when you look at the top 10 list, you could play those games for a year and have a year's worth of fun. Now, what are the best movies from 2008? The Dark Knight Rises. That's pretty amazing. That was a great movie.
It's the Dark Knight.
Oh, the first one, sorry. Very first one.
No, the middle one.
The middle one.
The good one.
You've then got Iron Man.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yes, the start of the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And then what else have you got? You've got Tropic Thunder, which is still a hilarious movie.
Wall-E's brilliant.
Is there much else that you'd go back to again?
Well there is
again,
a little known movie called Avatar.
Have you looked at the year, Mark?
2009.
Oh, what happened then?
Yeah.
And have you watched that film not in 3D? It's rubbish.
No, it looks amazing. But we don't talk about movies.
No, of course not.
We talk about board games. My point being... Board games stand the test of time.
Yeah.
Movies are transient. No one cares. So I'd much rather play a board game than watch a movie.
Yeah, yes, I'll go along with that. And particularly of this year. I mean, as you said, if someone said, okay, you're going to be stuck on a desert island and you can only have games from 1 year or have to all come from the same year, I tell you what, looking at that list.
It's a pretty hard list.
It's hard to pick another year that has all of those genres in there with worker placement, high-end worker placement with Le Havre and more introductory worker placement with Stone Age, co-op, pandemic and ghost stories. I mean, two ends of the spectrum, but both. Brilliant, Dominion, Cosmic Encounter, Space Alert, Dixit, my favourite party game ever, Time's Up Total Recall.
It's bloody amazing, and all of this just came through because I moved to Tasmania, so clearly there's something in the board game water.
Did we actually write down what won the awards those years?
Well, I grabbed the 2008 Golden Geek Awards, but I think what happened was, because this was a stellar 2 years, is it?
Yeah.
Agricola came out right at the end of 2007, so it snuck into the 2008 awards. Another little game we may have mentioned a few times, Race for the Galaxy, that came out at the end of 2007, was the runner-up. Another little game that maybe is still in the top 10 of Board Game Geek through the ages was the other runner-up. Now, these all came out at the end of 2007.
Jamaica as well. Great little racing game.
Say Anything was the party game, which was way down the list. So I don't know what happened to Time's Up. Race for the Galaxy won the best card game. Thebes, which was the game we talked about when we talked about Australia, with that timing mechanic of things moving around and you've only having a certain amount of time to do actions. That was the first game that had that sort of symbol. So if you take the games we've discussed and you look at those ones that came out at the end of 2007, in terms of an 18-month period, I don't think this can be surpassed.
Well.
And this is before Kickstarter. This is before, you know, 700, 800, 1,000 games coming out in a year. So you've got many fewer companies bringing out games, but wow, what quality.
And I'm so happy that designers are still getting income from them because there's still so many of them on our shelves. But anyway, that's enough. We just thought we'd remind everyone of what a vintage year 2008 was. We should do more of these. These years are very hit and miss. This was a spectacular one.
We're going to find one that's shocking.
Yeah, well, that won't be too hard.
I think the last couple we did, we might have done 2005.
Definitely.
And 2010, I think.
All right.
Just
so,
because they were round numbers.
We've got a couple of minutes to go. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with thanks to Area 52. We're going to go to a song and then we'll come back, talk about something, and then we'll let you all go. We'll be back after this song. Boom. Hideous Sun Demon with Oscillate. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, I had a pretty boring weekend. Wasn't invited to anything in particular.
Well,
is that exactly what happened with you, Liam?
No, not in the slightest, guys.
Oh, okay.
I think you'll find you were invited somewhere. You were both invited somewhere, but you just both decided not to come because of, well, just because you hate me, I suppose. That's what I'm telling myself.
Oh, anyway. That's what Mark and I talk about.
Garth, we weren't going to let him know that. Yeah, what happened?
Nah, that's fine. Wouldn't be
sorry, I was busy washing my hair.
You don't.
And watching the grass grow.
Oh, exciting stuff. Anyway,
what did you get up to, Leon?
Well, what I did on Saturday was we held the first ever, maybe even in Australia, the first ever werewolf championships, because it's the fifth time we've had a meeting of the Silver Bullet Society. We do it every 3 months or so, and we got a big old group of people together to play werewolf, and it happened to be St. Paddy's Day as well, which we didn't realise when we first booked it. So we had a few drunkards coming up near the stairs next to Area 52, but we luckily
what are you guys doing?
Luckily closed the door and didn't have
to worry
about
that wolf
that.
Mask?
Yeah, well, yes. Well, I had a death mask, but that's beside the point. So, yeah, so throughout the rest of the four other sessions we had during the year, whenever someone would in a game would do very, very well, we would give them a special bullet designed by our Rusted Rivets Designs here in Tasmania, a little plastic bullet, and that would be their special entry into the championship game we were going to have. So you guys didn't win them because you just weren't good enough.
No.
Or you just didn't come enough, I suppose. Well, either way.
Hello.
Whatever. but yeah, so we had about 20-odd people in the championship game. We played it a little bit different than normal werewolf. We took all the kid breaks off, basically. They didn't have a ghost to help them. They didn't have a mayor. They're getting no double votes. They just had nothing but their wits about them. And we had to actually, there's something really funny, because in the game of Ultimate Werewolf, if you're a mason, a member of the secret society, you know who the other masons are, and you know they're good guys, but you're not allowed to say the word mason or secret society or Illuminati. You're not allowed to say that at all, because you get dragged away in the night by the secret society and never seen of again. So that's something we had to really enforce in this game. And there was at one point a lady was trying to defend herself, and she was, people were saying, what kind of information do you have? And she was very, very cunningly saying, I have information on myself and at least a few others that we're good in the village, and that's all I'm going to say. And they kept prodding her and prodding her, and she kept dodging around the things until the person next to her said, she's saying she's a mason. and we just went, oh, no. And she, it was a young girl, and she just jumped up and we just, oh, no, no, no. She knew what she did straight away. And then another good friend of ours, Mel, she did exactly the same thing about 30 seconds later, and she was nearly in tears because she is the partner of our main moderator, Sam, and she was so excited to be in that game, and she was doing relatively well, and she said the M word, and then someone else said it later on as well, and it was just mayhem. But the game went really well. It came down to to five people, and the werewolves won. There was three of them, two werewolves and a sorcerer left, and then Ben, who was one of the werewolves that was left, we decided that he was the man that led them to that victory and became the first Tasmanian champion.
He would be so chuffed, because he considers himself quite an expert werewolf player, from what I've heard.
He's very good, and he does know that his stuff, although when he was trying to convince everybody, saying, like, I believe this person's that role because of this evidence or whatever else, some of his logic wasn't right, but we weren't telling anybody that, because it's not our place to, but some of it was right. So, you know, it was still pretty good. But we had lots of fun had by all. And we also, instead of giving out bullets for our next championship, which will be sometime this time next year, there's an expansion for Werewolf called Artifacts, which is something you can hand out to different people for various reasons. And what they are special abilities, basically, you can use in Werewolf games. So what we're doing is that whoever becomes a VIP, or the MVP, I should say, of a game, we're assigning them an artifact. And anytime they come to one of our sessions in the next year, they can use that artifact in any of our normal games.
Ooh.
But that same artifact also gives them an entry into the next championship game. So we gave out a few of them, so there's plenty of them already around.
Fantastic. All right. You are very kindly...
Yes.
Hosted by Area 52.
Yes, of course, our good friend Andrew. And Remy was there. He was the one who kept us there to about midnight. Thank you very much, Remy.
Oh, okay. So Andrew wasn't asleep on the lounge like he normally is?
No, the last time, actually, Remy was there the last time as well. Normally, yeah. So Andrew had... But he actually had a whole day off that day, Andrew had, which is just unheard of for that man.
It must be his annual day off.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, no, it was great fun. We love the venue, and they always help cater to us, and we had nothing but fun and games.
Well, we certainly appreciate them supporting us here at the Dice Men Cometh, and the fact they support you guys in the Silver Bullet Society, and they support a whole lot of...
Nothing but fun and games.
Well, we certainly appreciate them supporting us here at the Dice Men Cometh, and the fact they support you guys in the Silver Bullet Society, and they support a whole lot of gaming events in the community. It's awesome to see.
Well, I just went to them after we played Werewolf at PAX a couple of years ago and said, we want to run a big game of Werewolf. And he said, awesome, I'll stay here all night, let's get it done. And then every time we've done it, we've had like 80 or so people.
Which is amazing.
And it's a completely free event, like most of the events there, except when you play like Magic and stuff, you have to buy the packs and whatnot, which is completely fine, because then you still win stuff at the end of it. So, yeah, no, good fun all around.
So, okay, look, if anyone from Radioland wants to come down and play Werewolf,
yes,
all they have to do is join the Silver Bullet Society Facebook page,
exactly.
Find out, buy some tickets, pay for some accommodation, and then turn up and then probably lose and probably get killed by a...
Or you could just simply join the page and talk to other people about Werewolf and see some funny photos. I took some horrendous photos that night.
Sounds good.
I don't know what was wrong with my head.
Now, boys, it's time for us to get out of here. We've got a pub waiting, we've got some pub meals, and we're going to go and play some games.
Woo-hoo! You have been listening to The Dice Men Cometh on this, our episode 205, on the 22nd of March. It's autumn, it's chilly. I'm even wearing my Dice Man hoodie. So, we're out of here. Let's go play those games. Let's go get those chicken palmies. And we'll be back next week, at least two-thirds of us, because, Leon, you won't be joining us.
No, I've got to do some night shift stuff because that's what my job
is. That's how you pay the bills.
Yep.
Thank you very much for listening. We've been the Dice Men Cometh.
Have
this
a great
has been
week.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And good night.
Bye.
Toodle-oo.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.